Little after 10, so good morning, everyone. Welcome to our board retreat. First off, just want to say thanks. It's a long day, big time commitment, but a lot of great stuff on the agenda. I think we'll get a chance to hear from Tom and his team about a lot of initiatives, and just excited to hear what the day brings for us. So with that, Dr. Labasa, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, and good morning. And I had an opportunity. David Browning is here. I'm going to have him come up in a minute. He happened to be in town. David is works for Southern. It's not Southern Strategies anymore. It's Southern Group. And I've worked with David now for 7 years. As you can reflect back, in our years that we've been extremely successful in Tallahassee, and David's done a great job, and him and his partner in crime, Sydney, do a lot of work up there and running around the Capitol and making sure our projects stay in play during the session. And so with that, I'm going to introduce, because I don't know if some of you may have met David early on when we signed up with him, but it's been a little while, so you'll get to meet David, and he'll give us an update on the session. So with that, David. Can you come to the podium, because it's recorded? Yeah.
Thank you all very much for having me. I'm glad that it kind of worked out to be here. We have certainly enjoyed working with Daytona State and Tom Labasa. He's been a lot of fun to work with over this. And so, I think that this college has got a unique story to tell, and I think that's why we're successful. I think that it stands apart. I think how you conducted yourselves over the last couple of years of getting people back in here, of being a college in which people, when they come out of here, they have jobs. They're applicable degrees, if you will, and I think that that's really important to this legislature. I think that it's resonated. And with that, he always has an aggressive agenda relative to what we want to accomplish during the legislative session. We had four different items this year, the largest being the firing range, which is over $6 million. And we were able to get all four of those funded this year. So that was an awesome experience. As a matter of fact, I would say that the firing range, the Tom was really kind of the person to help put that over the edge. We had a dinner at my house and happened to have the chairman of that committee at the dinner, and Tom came over and was able to spend 30 minutes or so having dinner with him and talking to him, and they had a connection, and I think he believed into what the president was saying. And so with that, we've really enjoyed working with Daytona State. We're proud to represent Daytona State. We think y'all do an amazing job, and so it makes it easy for us to be able to go in and advocate for what you're wanting to do. The wind is kind of at our back here a little bit, in the sense that we're coming into a couple of years where you're going to have, leadership from this area, be it Paul Renner and Tom Leake. That's certainly something that should benefit this college. And I think we're also working really, really hard to make relationships beyond that, so that whenever Danny Perez, the speaker thereafter, or Sam Garrison, who's also from the Northeast Florida region, becomes speakers, we can take advantage of that. And on the Senate side, we have Kathleen Pasadomo, who's a great friend that'll be the Senate president at the same time, Paul Renner, and then Ben Albritton, who I think would like this college a lot, and then Jim Boyd thereafter. So I feel like we have the opportunity to continue to have success for Daytona State working with your team. So with that, I'll ask any questions. I try to answer any questions you have. If anything about what's going on up there. We're going in next week for the congressional maps. I think that'll be kind of just a stamp in and out. That'll go as the governor would like. And then, of course, the big debate is, do we come back and do anything relative to property insurance? So.
Just want to say thanks for all your support. It was a great year capital-wise. Any feedback for us on things that would, you hear, or things that we should keep an eye on as we move forward for the coming year?
I guess for me, it's to keep the focus. I mean, I think that, like I say, everything that we go and we take for projects to be funded, I feel like we do a really good job of articulating, the benefit to the state for those projects. And I don't think that's lost on the legislature. I think that they believe that everything that we're doing are needs that we're meeting that are needed, and we do a really good job of executing those once we do it. I think there's a belief, and I think rightfully so, that the money that is given to Daytona State is spent in a proper manner, you know, is diligently spent the way it should be, and the results are beneficial to the state. So I think that's...
I've had some representatives and senators look at our projects and always just be like almost, they almost want to say, why isn't my college in my area doing these kinds of projects? Because these are easy to get behind.
Yeah, we're not building temples to ourselves. Yeah. We're in there doing stuff that has a result and has a benefit to the state.
Yeah. Is there a potentially a theme there of things that they're looking at that we maybe have not thought about or not submitted that we could take advantage of because there's already a culture that's there that maybe we could use and get around?
I think you're already doing that. I mean, I think you're doing that because everything that you're doing are jobs that are out there that are available that people can take advantage of. And so I think that's the theme. I mean, I think that everything that you see talking about higher education is when somebody comes out with an education, with a degree, they want them to be able to get a job. And that's really what this college is tailored after. And so it kind of fits the niche already.
Yeah, I would add, we had our eggs and issues meeting this morning here on campus, and we had our delegation and Senator Wright, Representative Leak, Representative Federhoff, and Representative Barnaby were there. And I think we are in one of the themes that they accomplished a lot this year, and I think they're going to continue is to support law enforcement. And so again, you know, one of our biggest asks and we received was that. And David, if you thought I was aggressive before, wait till next year's. but I think as we're going to cover a little bit here, a vision and an idea surrounding all of our emergency services. What we'd like to do with that here at the college will fit into what we are looking at doing in the next year or two. So,
and being at that meeting, Representative Federoff and Representative Barnaby both gave a good portion of their allocated time to Daytona State College. So we were out front in the 100 people, 150 people, maybe more. I didn't count everybody, but it was huge, the Hosseini building. And you had mayors and you had elected officials and councilmen and aides to senators and representatives representing them. So it was a good voice out there today.
David, the governor has a little bit of bargaining position with holding the budget right now. He's got until June 30th to sign it. They're going back into the special session. They may have another on the property insurance. Should we be concerned about anything in the, you know, appropriations in our area for the college?
So we have met with the head of policy and budget for him and gone through every Daytona State ask, you know, that we have. We've met with them on that. We're providing information with them. We're working with them. And so, you know, you never know. I mean, I don't think we have anything to worry about relative to the special sessions, meaning the outcome of the special sessions are going to affect our request. I don't believe that. I believe that, one, the first session will go as planned, if you will. You know, normally they know the answer before they ask the question on these things. And so I think that's the reason, you know, seeing this one coming in because they know the answer. You haven't seen the second one called because they don't know the answer. And I think that our representatives here that would be affected, which would be Leak and Renner, are advocates relative to the second one. If anything, they see that issue, the property insurance issue, and have been wanting to be find solutions for it. So I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. Great. Thanks again.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And yeah, just to cap, you know, the property insurance was a big topic spoken about this morning as well, and that it's something they want to tackle, and they said it could be a few years to get where they need to get, but they're, you know, they're not kicking the can down the road anymore.
Yeah, that's it's reaching a crisis.
It is
situation. Not so much. We were feeling it here locally, but in South Florida, it's disastrous.
Yeah. I can tell you, my favorite stupid volunteer job was being president of a condo association for 11 years in a row. And I will tell you, last year when we got our property insurance bill, and we're a well-maintained property, it was our risk and liability and risk, insurance doubled. It went up over $100,000. We had to make monthly assessment jumps that we have, normally speaking, we would do anywhere from 0 to 2%. We went up 12% last year on the monthly assessments.
Yeah, I mean, you think about what happened at Champlain Towers, and it's just a devastating tragedy. And you know, it's sort of like you have to have some humanity in dealing with the situation, but now the business end comes into play. And so condos can't get the limits that they used to get. The attachment points, the assessments. It is really, really going to be a challenge going forward.
Yeah, you're right, though, because we had your useful life on a roof is 25 years, but because of all those lawsuits,
that's it.
Chasers that were going around from community to community, what ended up happening was your roof, if your roofs were 12 to 15 years of age or older, they wouldn't even talk to you. We put it out to bid. Our carrier put it out to bid to 35 different insurance covers. And I think only 15 out of those 35 responded even to our bid request. And some of them, they responded like, we hope you don't take this. The dollar amount was even worse than what we got.
All righty. Well, again, I'm glad David was able to be there. His relationships in Tallahassee are really, really good. And when I was up there, he had a dinner gathering and invited me over. And I was the only they represent other colleges. I was the only college there, which was nice. So I had. I had the ability to go to, it was good and good conversation, and he can get us into meetings that are not always easy to get into. So he definitely does a good job with that. So, all right, well, I will we'll move on with the agenda, and as before, a brief recap on a year gone by, and then we'll jump into some future conversation. But look at that, April 15th, we were breaking ground, and we are on our way to a ribbon cutting. So talk a little bit more about that in a minute. Again, had another great event up in Palm Coast, and that program is now fully humming along, and feedback has been great from the staff and students with the facility. And then I think this is a real testament to how the community feels about the college when, a local citizen, donates to the college in that fashion. So real pleased that we were able to get that gift, and I think it's going to, we'll build on that from this point forward. This fall we went back to pretty normal operations. We were able to host the women's national tournament, and again that brought 12 teams from all over the country on campus. Our neighbor down the road there on the top right hand got the national championship. Eastern Florida won the national championship for the women there, and we did last year have a in-person commencement. It was augmented, but we had everyone in person, so we did not do a virtual one last year, if you recall, and the students really appreciated that. We will be now going to a more normal one. You're all invited to come and go back to our regular process to be on the stage and the different roles there. So excited to do that. We also had our convocation in person in the gym a few weeks ago. And again, it was really nice to be able to gather again. So on our way. Another big project that we worked on this year was working with the Brown Riverfront Esplanade project that you will see that in the board agenda this coming year. And I think just again a great collaborative effort with the Esplanade to I think you're going to see a lot of real positive activity, and the News Journal Center is right in the heart of it, and I think we'll certainly benefit from all the work that's been done around us. We're going to even be included when they, over the holidays, they're going to light it up, and they offered to light up the News Journal Center too when they do that. So we'll be all part of that holiday celebration when the park does that. So we'll have one agreement coming forward later today, and then next month license agreement, which will deal more with the maintenance and some access. This is our road here, and we're going to be looking at giving them access to this road and shared dumpster space right there. So that's going to be all in that agreement that we were working out. So great project for the community. And there's a photo of the six new doctoral students. Again, launched this initiative a few years back, and mission accomplished. We've, credentialing our next generation of leaders here at the college. So they're all graduates of UCF now. And we had our first chapter of FAME launch, and again, it's been successful. We're gearing up for the next class, and you're going to, at the board meeting, we're going to have some faculty and students here to, introduce you to them. And it's, it was a new way of looking at some of our programs, and I think it's worked out really, really well. All right, and we're going to move into the academics, looking into the future. So there are two new programs we are looking to launch. First, we have spoken about this a month or so ago, is a BS in cardiopulmonary science. And Dr. Lockery is going to talk more specifically with you all about what that is and how it came to be. But, generally, we have our feelers constantly out in the community, and this one percolated as a big demand. We'll share more about that program. And then the other one is one that went to the legislators that you all approved to move forward. Again, with the governor's approval, hopefully soon, we will have a certificate program in pharmacy technician, which is, again, that one percolated really big from the hospitals in particular, who all have their own pharmacy and have a really, really big shortage in that area. So we're going to continue to look at that. So I am going to ask Amy to take the PowerPoint and share a little bit more about this.
Thank you. Good morning. We are really excited about developing this new bachelor's degree, Bachelor of Science in Cardiopulmonary Science. It's a mouthful. It'll be BSCS. We'll start getting into that lingo. This is a very in-demand credential. In fact, it builds upon a degree we already have, which is the AS in Respiratory Care. So it's a 2+2. It is designed to appeal to working respiratory therapists who want to advance to that next level. And job growth is very high. In fact, the entire field is moving towards the bachelor's being the standard. It will give our students some significant advantages on the job market with moving into management, telehealth, and you can get the ability to directly bill Medicare with a bachelor's degree. And so that makes you a more valuable employee to hospitals and so forth. So we're real excited about that. It's a very technical degree. It is going to be a hybrid offering, so online, but plus some face-to-face meetings to build the cohort of students that will go through it. And
I'm sorry. I need a tutorial on how to handle the microphone. Excuse me. What does that job typically, what's the salary range for that job? Do you know those jobs?
I think it's in the high 50s, but I need to check. Actually, I might have it right here. Let me check on that. Okay. Any other questions while I'm...
I'd just say the timing is... absolutely perfect, given what we've been through in the last 3 years. And I'll do a book recommendation. Read John Barry's book, The Great Influenza, and not going through this kind of current situation with COVID, but looking back, this is going to be in such demand in the future. Wow, this is a home run, not for what we just went through, but for the future. So
thank you for that.
Great, great pick.
Good. I'm glad to hear you say that. The I have an hourly rate is $29.28 an hour.
$60,000. $60,000. Yeah. So we're excited about. I mean, I think it's it already addresses an immediate need and then a future need with everything that's gone through and our the community's already filled with AS degree graduates at Daytona State, that this will be a great opportunity for them to build on for promotion purposes and whatnot. So, and again, it's a new program that will create new enrollment for the college that we would not have if we didn't have the program. So I think that helps our enrollment issues that we've also been experiencing, the last few years.
Yep, that's well done.
Oh, and I, part of the process too is, we, as a state college, these degrees cannot be approved just locally. It's got to go through a state process. And part of that process is me contacting all the area colleges. And I've heard back from all but one, which I think will be fine. And they all support us doing this degree. So so that starts the process. It's a lengthy process. I don't know. Are you going to cover the process?
No, I will just – it takes about a year, year and a half to get this through. We have to post it for a certain number of days, I think, 90, to let all other colleges in the state comment on it. But we do have the support of UCF, which is honestly the most important one locally, and they do support it. So it gets posted, then we do a formal, there's like an intent to apply, notice of intent, then the actual application, and we supply, it'll be letters from area hospitals. We already have a bunch. We have them from Halifax, from Advent, from Winnie Palmer, for ORMC. They've all written an endorsement already, so that won't be a problem. It's been very well supported in the community.
And I believe there's only...
three other programs.
Three other state colleges offering this right now.
Yep. But I think we'll see more because,
completely separate conversation, I'm sure. But, is there not a more efficient, have any influence in the efficiency of the process to get it going? I mean, I think Bob recognized in his comment, we need it now and in the future. And I get it. I understand there's this bureaucratic process. But, my goodness, that's the world, in a year and a half, the whole thing could change.
Yeah. That's a great question. This process goes back to the Senator Negron days and the philosophical issues regarding whether we should be doing baccalaureate degrees or not.
Yeah, good.
So they put a rigorous process in place. And again, I think there's definitely merit on the process, to a point. Not that we would do it, but certainly it flags it so we wouldn't start Bachelor of Arts degrees in philosophy, say, since state feels we have enough. So, you know,
I don't think I'm really just I'm not. Yeah. I don't disagree with the premise of the process. Yeah. It's the length of the process.
So hopefully over time, Randy, I think over time that we'll get better as they recognize that we are really, you know, we're staying true to our mission. These are workforce baccalaureate degrees. I mean, these are baccalaureate degrees that get you jobs. So I think as that gets recognized over time, there may be maybe another look at that. But
if you look at the board evaluation and the things that we were asked to complete, you know, I mean, clearly this is part of some of the things that we're talking about. We would be much better off if the process was shorter. I think I made my point. So
that's a great point. It's probably one worth mentioning to the commissioner. I mean, I've seen some states that have like a fast track list, and so if you're interested in, you know, STEM degree or a health degree or something, and there's a quicker track than if you're trying to do the example where every state college has one already and they don't need the jobs or whatever it might be. So
that's the other point. You said that there's three. You said there's three state colleges currently that have this program. So I think to piggyback what Randy just said, that's a way to streamline the process, right? If somebody else has gone through it, we should be able to shorten the term.
If I may, you got to go back not too many years ago. Being a community college, the universities, we didn't want us to have bachelor degrees, and that was the big battle, that we were taking students from the universities, and we fought that battle and inch by inch, not quarter by quarter. It was inch by inch, and thanks to Farouk and how she accomplished and worked with Tom to start that. They did not want community colleges to interfere with universities, so you have all the universities blocking community colleges from going on to bachelor's degree. We worked hard and tedious and long. So there's another gear to that whole equation. We don't want community colleges, and we had to beg, plead, and borrow.
I think the environment's much better now. It's much better.
Much better.
And I think it's something certainly we, you know, I'm happy to discuss with our DOE, you know, folks to see if these ideas can be entertained in terms of fast track for some of these.
It's definitely worth a conversation.
I think it's worth a conversation.
Yeah, I think it's kind of maybe a two or three prong approach, though, too, not just there, but also, you know, through our legislative priorities. Maybe sometimes we need to look at processes that are broken that need to be fixed and try to, you know, drive home on those. I know we're talking about the dollars and all that, but also, too, sometimes it's, you know, projects like this that can help our enrollment but also serve the needs.
Sure. Yeah, there's an advantage when you think about, which should be our focus, how do we create high-paying jobs, opportunities for high-paying employment opportunities in this area? Should be part of our, you know, mission, frankly. It's like that's we're not producing employees for gas stations. You know, we should be focused on providing career opportunities, not just jobs. And you know, the second thing is it's a tough argument. I mean, it's a tough thing. I mentioned the John Barry book, The Great Influenza, and this particular program, because if you read that book, it will frighten you into seeing what happened then, what we've just been through, and then looking forward into the future. But they didn't have nurses in 1918 in the Great Influenza, and didn't have had inadequate medical personnel to address what was happening, and you know, the horrendous toll that took back then. And so have we learned? We talked about this a while back. Did we learn anything? Are we going to do the same things over again after this COVID-19 pandemic? You know, time will tell, but this is a response to that. And so you don't train firemen when the building is burning. This will be for the future. It really isn't for the present. But there's no reason why it should be delayed, a year and a half. I mean, if we had another surge in future years with COVID-19, these students will help save lives. And that's a pretty pressing need, not just the economic opportunities for them, but for society. This is a critical need.
The other program that Dr. Labasso mentioned is a career certificate, also known as a PSAV or post-secondary adult vocational certificate. It's 1,050 hours, can be done in a year. This has been a big request from area hospitals that have a lot of trouble finding pharmacy technicians. Students can earn that specific certification, and we can do 60 a year in this program. So we think, we're hoping that the legislative allocation comes to support the lab and equipment and a faculty member for a year. A couple of other new ones on the horizon, beginning this fall, a concentration inside the baccalaureate of applied science and supervision and management in healthcare. And then also, after the new building on the Deltona campus comes, it will house another very high demand, high wage area in diagnostic sonography. So we're shooting for September 24 on that one.
Amy, just a quick question. On the ones like this, the certificate where you said the hospitals really support it because they have a shortage, do they have tuition reimbursement, or do they send students to get it, or do they?
I don't think that has been part of the conversation with the hospitals. It's
probably worth the conversation. For. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I think they generally they have a tuition reimbursement program, generally speaking, but we don't know specifically on this program, so that's worth a follow-up with them.
That'd be another thing that would speak to the legislature if a local hospital said, hey, we'll pay for the first 50, 100, whatever the number is, students. I mean, it's a pretty clear indicator of demand.
You know, I also serve on the Council on Aging Board, and we had a long discussion about CNAs, certified nursing assistants, and the demand for local hospitals and also the COA in caring for the elderly population, which continues to grow. And obviously in the pandemic, it was in high demand, and the inability to hire enough CNAs, that is a critical need, because the average wage for a CNA is about $13, going to $15, you know, and there's competition out there. But at that wage, you know, that's not adequate. That's not going to do it. So we got a little bit of supply and demand issue out there. And so I hope that we continue to focus on that as well through the college, because I think there is an opportunity for Daytona State College to provide an answer for that that critical need in Volusia County, Volusia and Flagler.
Amy, would you refresh my memory? How do we go about advertising these new programs?
Well, that's Dr. DeQuino's area, but we do a lot of marketing for them and share it with local employers, and we can run ads on our TV station and include it in what the recruiters talk about when they go out to high schools.
Okay.
We have a video, I think, to share later that highlights these, is very effective, that highlights these programs.
Yeah, because I know it's important getting to the right people, so I couldn't remember. I know we have a long process.
Yeah, generally speaking, when we launch a new program, you know, we have our quick press the button, and it's going to be in our website and our brochures, the things we mail to students right away. And then we always keep a little extra money to give new programs an extra boost for awareness, because it's new. So we will do that, and you know, there'll be ads purchased ads, not just a normal social media push. Purchased ads, you know, radio. We do some TV, and then some targeted social media drops. So yeah, we have a comprehensive plan, and we give new programs a little extra funding to get them a higher frequency out there, so that it helps with the awareness.
Thank you. Let me add on to the pharmacy, the one before. I have a cousin who just retired as a pharmacist, and he's being offered $200 a day to work a 4 or 5 hour shift at various pharmacies throughout Volusia County. The restaurant I go to has a son that's in pharmacy, I've got the college, and he's in his third year, and he's been offered by Walgreens and the other drug chains $150,000 for a three-year contract, even before he graduates. That's how much in demand pharmacists are, not just in hospitals, but out there on the street. They can't cover your local pharmacy with pharmacists. It's just, they can't even give them days off. That's one of the reasons he retired. He was working 7 days a week, so I've had it. But it not only is hospitals, but it's the chains that are just, and they're willing to offer this kid $125,000 to $150,000 before he graduates.
Thank you. All right. So, looking ahead to the future, you know, as hopefully we can, you know, we will get the final signing on our firing range, which is slated to be on the DeLand campus. And I've been thinking, and we've had conversations regarding emergency services in general and the DeLand campus. So, you know, I think the vision has become even clearer. And so with that, I want to talk to you a little bit about the idea of creating a center for emergency services that would be located on our DeLand campus. And it would include the programs you see there, our EMS, our corrections, our EMT, law enforcement, and paramedic program. We have firefighting too, but most of that occurs at Tiger Bay. And we would keep that there because they have all those facilities there. So, you know, and I think, you know, packaging it as a destination emergency services location will not only enhance and support, as the legislature wants to do, for emergency service personnel, but to attract enrollment, but also it will serve all the continuing education we do for all of those areas. There's a lot of continuing education that happens, and I think a state-of-the-art center would really, I think, be well-served for our community. Did you have a...
Well, I just think that, I think that, you know, my belief is that the pendulum is going to shift back to a position where police officers, other EMS services are going to be probably be in more demand. There's a demand now, but there's also a significant, I don't want to do it because of a whole list of reasons, right? I believe that it's going to take a different course in our culture and our communities again, and we need to be ahead. I love the idea of a focus. You know, that you're going to be able to say this is a focus. Question that I have is, do we have public transportation from the surrounding community, you know, Deltona, Daytona, to have for access? I think that's a big deal. If we could have some conversation with the routes to make sure that people can get there, if not by their own transportation.
That's a great question. Fortunately, I believe DeLand is one of the campuses that Votran does not stop. So that's a follow-up conversation with the county on, and we've had that conversation, you know, part of being here 20 years is, you know, some things keep coming back up, but we had conversations with Votran several times on creating a stop at DeLand. And it's not happened from their perspective, it comes down to volume and ridership. And it was an issue for a population of ours. You know, we at one point had a very big adult education program, high school GED, ESOL. So we saw the need. It wasn't a very large group of people, but enough that we would hear from students that they couldn't get there. That demand on that from the program has diminished quite a bit over the years because we've been able to create an online version and things like that. So we've been able to accommodate that. But to your point in terms of having this is a whole new programming, so we certainly will evaluate that and bring it back to the county for consideration to run a route.
If I may, when we attended the Deltona Commission meeting Monday night, they were overjoyed with the new building. Each one of them came off the bandstand to shake your hand, my hand, and thank us. And we heard many stories from Deltona, regarding the travel distance from Deltona to Daytona Beach campus. And they were all in favor of, wow, Deltona is going to get this, and we're going to do that, and we're going to do that. I think in the long and term short of it, if we get Deltona behind us and the land, I think they'll put the pressure on the county because it's Midway and their people won't have to travel all the way here. That was one of the big concerns that we heard at that commission meeting, and they all came down off the bandstand. I never saw such joy and bravo from that commission, but I think we have a good partner in saying we're going to meet halfway.
What do we need to create that from a resource facility standpoint? So the firing range hopefully will come through. There's part of the law enforcement is a driving component. And we'd like to have a driving pad constructed, a training house or two. Those are houses that are utilized to train our cadets to create perimeters around a home, how to properly enter a home, clear rooms, and things like that. So it's it'd be a building, but it won't be necessarily it's not an air-conditioned building, so I don't think this is an expensive, these are not expensive, but, and you build, I've seen them where you build, we had this when I was in the reserves, National Guard up in Camp Lanning, but you have platforms, so the instructors can be looking down into the room and evaluating the technique of the cadets as they clear the room, and you know, are they clearing it properly, do they have security behind them, and so on and so forth, so. So we think that will really, again, enhance what we do. The other one is a running track for physical training. They have to pass a physical training test, and we have to. Right now, we're using a track that Advent Health Orman has allowed us to use. We don't have our own right now. So this is a running track, and on the running track, there's some stations that you stop and I don't know exactly what you do, but you do some pull-ups,
take
push-ups.
A break.
Take a break. So it would really be a state-of-the-art, really thinking about a state-of-the-art, destination for this type of training. And if you're running a lot, you need some locker rooms and a shower before you go back into your classroom. and I have a side note there just to share that, welding, in terms of moving programs, is one of the only program in our School of Workforce that's located on this campus, and at some point we might want to look at moving it to the ATC, just for some synergy with the other programs that we have there, with auto body, and our construction program and things like that, and HVAC. There's some synergy there that we could get. There's one of our programs has some light. Our FAME program has light. Welding is part of it. Welding is a pretty big component. And it's and it's a very good, it's doing extremely well here, and we have the advanced welding here. So it's just a thought, just want to throw that vision out to y'all that may be another move we want to make programmatically that might need some resources.
You had mentioned that the fire part of this is at Tiger Bay. What's the size of this property in DeLand that you have?
It's 100 acres.
That's what I so, I mean, is there some day down the road where you could see all of that, truly every single thing that relates to EMS on the public be moved there?
Let me throw out one other thing, and this is not a definite, and I spoke to Tom about it Monday. I've been approached by Chief Spike, who was the police chief here in Daytona Beach, and he brought me a gentleman that has 150 canines that train from all over the United States. He's considered the number one canine trainer, and they want to bring that group here in November for a week. That would be a perfect location for... and worldwide known. So there's a lot of components. Right now I'm searching to help them out. But my grandson was here 6 months ago from Sparta, Tennessee, where he's a deputy sheriff, and had a train in Ocala. And so they drove back and forth every day. So I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm in the throes of working with them right now.
And... So, yeah, I think that we have the land to continue to develop this further. So that certainly could be part of that vision. And I'm going to ask Chris to come up to show you just concept. We are beginning our master planning process that you all will be involved in here. And the first focus is the DeLand campus because we are placing the – we want to get some professional minds around – proper placement of not only that building, but all the facilities that we are thinking about. So I just asked Chris to just conceptually plop them down. They may move, so it's not written in stone by any means. So, but I think it'll give you a map of the campus, see where the size of the campus and where we'll go from there. So, Chris, we just want to share a little bit of our main, this is our DeLand campus, and you can take it away.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. So as we were talking about before, we have about 100 acres out there. So it's a fairly large campus. It's about the same as this campus. New Smyrna and Flagler all are about 100 acres. So it's about that size. It is our second largest campus that we have. We've got 9 buildings currently on that campus. In the 2000 academic year, there was just under 3,000 headcount for that academic year at this campus. So very active. It has a nursing program that's located there, as well as dental hygiene that services the public. So public actually go to that campus to interact with the students. So it is kind of one of those growing and large campuses. It was actually the first week that I was employed here at Daytona State, we had the board meeting, and a couple of you were there. It was my first week, and it was my first time to that campus. So this is exciting. So what we were doing is kind of envisioning where this new program could be located on that campus. Last board meeting, you approved our new master planning architect. So the master plan will be beginning, and what we're going to do is we're going to focus our attention on this campus due to the potential funding of that firing range, so that we can make sure that it's located with other future programs like the fire that you were talking about. We want a vision 20 years out is really what we're looking for. So, you know, where this campus will go, at least in that future direction, so that we make sure that wherever we place these new projects and the new EMS school are working together with the campus and also with the public that may be going to the campus to use these buildings. So right now on the, this is actually the west side of the campus, which is to the right. That's building 9 that's there. There's a little ball court that's next to it. There's also a practice field that's out there that are used by some of the students. And that is really what we're looking at as the potential location for this future development. And the way that we're kind of conceptually envisioning is that it would be a three-phase program. So the first one would, of course, be the firing range that we were looking to get the funding this year. And if we go to the next slide, we'll put that firing range somewhere in that vicinity on that west side, expand the parking a little bit to be able to have parking in addition to where the student parking is now. A lot of times we have outside law enforcement agencies that come to speak with the students and deal with them. They may even participate in activities at that firing range. So right now, that first phase, which would be included with the funding that we're getting this year, would be that firing range, excuse me, and some new parking there.
Is that, refresh my memory, is that a 16 station?
18 lane.
Yeah, I think it is too. And they're extra wide. They're 6 foot wide stations. The idea here was that they would be able to move those stations out of the way to make it very flexible, even to bring a car into the firing range to be able to do exiting a car and practicing with that. It also has night lighting, which would be part of it, so that it could go daytime, nighttime scenarios. They have the lights going at the same time. There's distractions. It's actually going to be pretty state of the art. So.
Yeah, it's what I'll sign right up for that one.
Trustee
yeah.
privileges.
Right.
there's a simulation room, I believe, program.
Virtual, yes. Yeah.
Virtual, you know. And
this is all part of the funding request that we're waiting yes, on the final.
Correct. Yep. Correct. Yeah. So when, of course, we'll be bringing that back as that one moves forward. We've already brought in an architect and a contractor are waiting for that funding approval that I'll be bringing them back to you. I'm thinking it may be in the next couple months we'll be bringing them in, start that design process. We've already vetted them through our procurement.
If I remember right, this building is being built and constructed and placed in such a fashion that you could actually add on to it without a big deal. Is that we had some discussion about that, or is that not accurate?
Well, it could. So, and that's kind of what, and you'll see. I didn't actually connect them because this is kind of just a very conceptual. Yeah. But we definitely would have that ability if we wanted to do that. And I think with the area that we're putting it, there's a large amount of space. Right now, it's heavily wooded. I dotted it with a lot of trees, but nowhere near what's actually out there. So we've got a lot. And I think it'll also offer a little bit of a buffer between these facilities and some of the other stuff we have on campus. So, you know, there'll be that synergy there, but it also will give them their own space, but with the ability to connect to it or be adjacent to it. So, you know, with that being said, if we go to phase two, you can kind of see how that future growth maybe happens in the next phase, which would be that driving pad that Dr. Lobasso was referring to. This is a 300 by 500 foot concrete or asphalt driving pad. What they do with that is they'll actually flood it at times to do simulated, you know, weather, driving techniques, spinning, you know, doing different things like that. They'll have full traffic signalization out there so that they can, you know, monitor how things happen with intersections and that type of thing.
NASCAR drivers can practice.
There you go. You can do autocross out there, all kinds of different things. But that would actually have a car storage because we'd probably have a couple cars that would be part of that program. That we'd want to have a covered, at least roof-covered area for those, bleacher seating. And then there would be a connection to the new parking that we would do with the firing range that would you'd be able to drive through that lot onto that driving pad and get access that way to it. So that's large. It would take a lot of space to do that, but it's something that they actually do now, I believe, in one of the training facilities.
We're using the sheriff's right now.
Right.
It's smaller than that. It's not even in today. It doesn't even meet today's. It's grandfathered in, but it's doesn't meet today's minimum standard.
Something.
That's my understanding.
A little bit of an aside, but you know, looking at that driving pad and the idea for law enforcement, is there an opportunity to make it available for other types of programs for the general public? For instance, right now, I think driver's ed programs have pretty much been eliminated in the high schools. And, you know, driving on International Speedway Boulevard, you can see that the consequences of that. so I'm wondering if there's an opportunity, even at a high school level, to make some of these, you know, a driving program, driver's ed program that would be a moneymaker. Exactly, have it as a dual enrollment or whatever you want to do. But I think the idea that we could bring that in as a parent of teenagers, you know, it would be not all of us get the chance that Mr. Dye over here had to train a driver in racing conditions. But, you know, the opportunity to have that program.
You see how successful I was.
That's right.
A racer, not a driver.
But the idea maybe that we open it up on a broader basis, it could be an opportunity. I mean, it could be a good revenue source.
Yeah, I think all of that is, you know, possible for sure.
What's the perimeter road? Is that just drawn for sake of the?
Are you talking about in the background there?
Yeah,
that's I-4.
Okay, not a good plan. Never mind.
Yeah. It's so wooded over there, you can't see. And I've heard Dr. Labasso, I think, actually said that there was a time that they cleared the area between the trees and you could actually see part of the campus from I-4. But our property line does go right up to I-4.
Gotcha. Again, talking about the driver's ed, if you can get them on I-4, if they can survive that, they can do anything.
There you go. Let's see. Yeah, our final analysis. If you've survived I-4,
we'll get a ramp. Yeah. We'll get a ramp put in and...
We've talked about, you know, that's a great location too. With the pad could also serve, like, there's drone, you know, events that happen and things like that. So yeah, I think the possibility is wide open to how we could leverage this for greater community, you know, access and possibly some revenue generation.
Okay, we'll go to phase three. So that takes the rest of those programmatic pieces. The training house that would be over there would be, you know, somewhere near that firing range, you know, because they kind of go hand in hand on how they would breach and, you know, access properties. And then on the other side, we have the running track that would go somewhere along that side. It would go through the woods or, you know, whatever near that, have those stations, the training stations there. And then the locker room shower facility would need to be added as well and have some kind of a connection to that existing building 9 that's there, as well as the firing range and the training house. So, you know, I think there's plenty of room that's still out there. If fire did ever come back over, like you suggested, I think that definitely should be part of that 20-year plan that we're looking on, how maybe those type of things, you know, they usually have a tower and, you know, several things that are involved with that. You know, I think that's something we could definitely look at, how that expansion happens as well.
I think in that layout, there's not a lot of opportunity, or at least I don't have the scale, so I can't understand exactly what it is. But I don't think there's a lot of opportunity to expand the firing range, and there may not need to be one. I mean, 16 stations or 18 stations is a pretty big number, so it's probably adequate. But that's just an observation.
Yeah, and again, I'm not sure this is to scale, Chris.
It is to scale.
And it's conceptual. Like, yeah, I mean, you know, that this can be shifted a little bit there to leave a little bit of space if these are the lanes to go out that way a little bit more. It's certainly a possibility, and you know, we'll throw that out to them.
How large is the running track?
That I guessed at the length, but there is a required length. So they have a length that's there that when it would be designed, we would put that in there. There's a certain number of stations, and I'm not sure what that is either.
You know, well, I'm just thinking it. You know, it might be an interesting, depending upon how you do it, it could serve as a cross country track for the school,
yeah, team, yeah.
Other schools, you know, other high schools. I mean, I would think about it in terms of more than one use.
That's a good idea. Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about that one.
Yeah. Exactly. You know,
because we don't have we started cross country. We don't have a home course, but we use Riddles from time to time. Run on the beach, you know.
Well, it's pretty to run on the beach, you know,
this could be a destination.
National caliber.
I mean, you've got the, if you have the, how big's the shower facility?
Well, that it's yet to be determined. So, you know, do we put some classrooms also in there? You know, when that expansion happens, we'd have to make that determination. You know, how big and locker rooms and.
I would consider it being more than one use.
What about the other facilities for, like, the paramedic or the EMT? So a lot of these focus on the law enforcement or corrections.
Right. And we talked about moving all of them, right? So this building right here exists, and it's very underutilized. So there's some classroom opportunities here to move, you know, some of the classroom facilities. This here also is where the library is, and it's a very large building. And it used to hold adult education, which, again, the enrollment, as you know, we've talked about over the years for adult education, has gone down significantly. So in our thought process, that this building and this building would be dedicated to all the other support classrooms that may be used. There's the library sits here, but it takes up a good, you know, footprint. And libraries have changed, right, over the years. If you see, I think this library's footprint is larger than the library we just created here. So I think there's opportunity where, you know, we don't know for sure, but to your point, we have to start, that all that programming is going to start to happen so that, you know, we can have, you know, EMT's got a classroom and, you know, all those support programs that you're talking about have classrooms. There's a defensive tactic padded room where they go and knock each other around. We'll need that. But we think we haven't gotten that far. And if it's not, then there might be another facility we need. But we think we can repurpose these two buildings. This might be literally a total gut and redo because of how it was. It's an older building. It's been there a while. It's still in good shape, but it's designed for a library in the middle of it. So
I was building one.
This is building one?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, building one to that campus. So when I first got here, admissions was located on this side at one time, and registration, which is now located. These two are the two newest buildings on campus, building 8 and building 9. We are game planning all of those support classrooms because, you know, law enforcement has classroom instruction is, you know, a big component, so we got to make sure but we think with, you know, the way enrollment has shifted to online and things like that I think, Amy, correct me if I'm wrong, this building has our academic support center in it. Does that look right? I think it's this building here. It has our academic support center. So there could be some synergy. I don't, you know, we have to look on whether the library would stay, just be reconfigured in this building, or moved into this building where our existing academic support center is. So that may give us some opportunities there.
Just a chance to build it right from the first. See you.
Absolutely.
Chris, this is maybe another just point in the thinking, but I went through an active shooter drill. And it was interesting to hear the comments from law enforcement about different things that they would employ and depending on what happened in the circumstances. But one of them was roof access, that they might actually bring in by helicopter and drop them right on the roof, and they would go floor by floor, not from the bottom but from the top, depending on where the situation arose. So as we think about the structures in the buildings, you know, having that set up as well, because multi-story buildings, they need training in that as well. And there probably aren't very many opportunities here locally, but FDLE will sure tell you that's something that they train their officers in.
When you see the training house, now is that, I mean, that's physical training.
No, yes? That's the house.
I'm sorry.
They call it a shoot house.
10-4. Okay. Yeah. So I'm looking at that and going, wait a minute, it's too far away from the locker room shower, but I got it.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, the facility that doesn't have air.
Yeah, gotcha.
And they have movable partitions. They can set it up for different things.
Yeah.
In there. That's where they would have the platforms, like Dr. LaVosa was saying. You could look down into it. They'll watch them go through different scenarios. There's one actually in Brevard. If you right on 95, as you go, if you go up into Brevard on the east side, you can actually see one of those. They have a house that's there in a firing range and for their sheriff's office, and you can kind of see how they did it with some berms and some things. It's pretty interesting.
Got it.
Does Corrections have a house like that? That has, like, you know, cells and...
Right, yeah, the like a corrections facility? No, I mean, we didn't really talk about that, but I don't know. They must go through some kind of training.
You would think it'd be neat to go see some of the state-of-the-art facilities.
Well, we'll definitely be bringing these back. I think as we go through these, we'll bring them back. You know, later in the board meeting today, I'll be bringing the contract for that master planner back for approval. As soon as we have them, they'll start, you know, moving forward with this and that future forecast. We'll bring that back to a workshop, make sure you guys are involved in that process. And I think one of the other components that was interesting that was part of it is circulation and bus routes and all those things will be part of this master planning process. Interconnectivity even between campuses, Deltona and DeLand, they look at all that when they do these master planning since we have so many campuses. And I made sure that when we were soliciting that architect that that it was going to be part of their responsibility was to take a look at that infrastructure between and how people and students would move between those campuses. It's a pretty important thing. So I think we'll relook at that and see how the buses might become a better part of it.
Just to add to it, when my grandson was here with two other sheriff's deputies from Tennessee, it was brought from all over the United States to Ocala, and just as Tom said, there was bandstands, there was the instructor in the room to see how the canine and the sheriff's deputies reacted to certain situations. So it's huge. It can go, you know. It can just go on. They were each trained in how they reacted at a moment's notice, and it just it's more than I know.
And I think as if looking for the board to give us a consensus on this vision that we will then start to pull in. We have a chief's group that meets monthly, and our other advisory board members that we have for these other programs. That we utilize them in this planning. That and go do some visits so that we take a look at the what's out there, state of the art, and best of the best, and see what we can do here on our.
I think it's an exciting concept.
Yeah, I do too, and probably some philanthropic opportunities because there's a lot of people and groups that are passionate about emergency services, law enforcement, and name a shooting range or.
Tom, Flagler County has their own small public transportation that they use. I don't know whether or not we would want to put together our own transportation and have it out there that can go from whatever the distance is to bring them in. It's something that we can think about and maybe, look at doing, see if it's cost effective more than trying to run down Volusia County and asking them to have, their buses make a stop. So it's something that we just can look at. Yep.
All right. Mm-hmm. All right. So is everyone good? Does anyone need a break?
Keep pressing on.
All right. So... this future is getting real close, we're excited that the resident hall is on time and under budget. Our ribbon cutting date is set for May 5th, 1:00. So hope you can all be there. And the interest has been incredible. And Charisse, I'm gonna have Charisse Ramos come up and. Share some highlights with you on where we are so far, and we're real excited about it. And if you walk by it right now, the fence is gone, and actually I think Charisse is going to show you a little sneak peek of it. So I won't talk anymore. I'm going to let Charisse take over. Charisse, it's all yours.
All right. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
I'll be presenting to you today our residence hall updates. This is certainly an exciting new chapter for Daytona State College, and I hope you all share in my enthusiasm to be a part of this history. This is the student life team that has been actively working with all of us to build all the business processes for the residence hall. In the top photo on the left, you'll have myself there, Charisse Ramos, Dean of Student Development, and right next to me is Cameron Bunn. She has been recently hired as our residence life coordinator, and Cameron Bunn is actually a Palm Coast resident. She is a former RA at the University of South Florida. She earned her degree in her BS in Integrated Public Relations and Advertising. Next to her, we have Elijah Hauser. He's a director of student life. And then we have Adrian, who you all know and are very familiar with, our SGA president. Our most recent hire is Shakira Carson. She's our student life coordinator, and she's actually a former RA as well. She was actually the runner-up for the residence life coordinator position, so we are really happy to have her on board. She is actually a Mainland High School graduate. She dual enrolled here with us at DSC to earn her associate's degree, and then she got her bachelor's in psychology at Florida Atlantic University. So both Cameron and Shakira, they enjoyed being RAs, and they're really looking forward to building with us as we move forward in the residence hall.
I have to say, when you look at this group, all under 1 year, so this is a very new, very young team, new team. And kudos to Charisse for, you know, stepping in as an interim dean and becoming the dean, and more good things to come, and you know, building a residence hall, policies, procedures, countless hours talking to peers, picking my brain, whatever's left of it, and trying to help. I never worked directly in residence life prior life, but both of those colleges were residential colleges. So in the enrollment services area, we worked closely with res life because we were getting the students in the door. And in being a resident student, so it's been fun to, you know, kind of build this and even policies and procedures on, you know, how do we handle, you know, study hours and quiet hours and all good stuff. But just want to just give a kudos, and again a young team that's Elijah's been with the college though
6 years.
He worked he led the TRIO grant.
Yeah, he was our TRIO project director for talent search.
Which was a grant that got discontinued,
mm-hmm.
And this opportunity came, and we scooped him up, and he's done a great job. So he has 6 years with the college, but year one in residence life and student life.
That would make sense.
So anyhow, go ahead, Charisse.
All righty. So as you all know, the residence hall has 252 beds. But if you look at the total applications, we have well over 600 already, so the interest has just been enormous. The entire college community is enthusiastic and excited for this new chapter. I do have some updated numbers. I ran over to Student Life before I came here. So currently, we have 219 total housing deposits received. What that means is we have only 33 spots left to offer in our residence hall, and that will be shared between our walk-on athlete students and our non-athletic student population. If you look at where applications are coming in from, the majority of them are from Florida. They're in state. Over 500 of those are, but we do still have out-of-state and international. For out-of-state, we have Colorado, Connecticut, Georgia, Massachusetts, Maryland, New York, Pennsylvania, Texas. Internationally, we have Brazil, Japan, Spain, Switzerland, the Netherlands, and even the UK. So you can see our student population is very diverse and very globally represented, and we're very happy with that. As far as county highlights, of course, Volusia County is the largest, but if you see here, we have interest from other counties as well. We have Flagler, Duval, Brevard, Hillsborough, Orange County, Palm Beach, and Seminole County. So just a lot of interest coming from all around.
I think what's key to this slide, too, is that, you know, and I've not heard anyone say this, but this doesn't surprise me that we have a majority of the applications from Volusia and then Flagler County. Working at residential colleges before, that was very much the case. You know, the if you drew a 45-minute radius from the colleges I worked at, that's where the bulk of the resident students came from. So when we were doing this, I say that to say this completely fits our mission, because we are providing affordable housing to the Volusia and Flagler County residents, more so than any. Obviously, we've always had international students, even before we had a residence hall. We've always had kids from other states, but now we're giving them this opportunity that these students, and I know we have students that in that committed pool from Mainland High School, and if you remember me saying, I hope we have kids that live four blocks away from us take the opportunity to immerse themselves in a college experience, focus in on their education, be surrounded by support services, be surrounded by students that are all here for the same reason. So I'm excited that the representation is what it is there. So I just wanted to note that there.
It's a safe and affordable place for kids to go. Do we know the applicants from out of the area? Do we know what programs they were going into?
We do not have that information.
We have that data. We haven't looked at it, though. We can pull that by major, and that's a good idea. We will do a deep dive, and that'll help us figure out is correlations between, is it nursing, students that are coming here to try to get into the residence hall.
Maybe
we have the data. I haven't seen a report that shows that yet.
It may even be how you put them in the facility, right? Because you might study and all that sort of stuff.
I've talked to President Labasso about interns at, for instance, at Brown & Brown, and we bring them in from all over the country, and oftentimes they have apartment leases or student housing obligations at the institution where they attend. And it's very difficult for them to, even at UF, I heard students that traveled had internship opportunities in Orlando and commuted every day. 2 hours each way to go to their internship, so they could keep their apartment or keep their student housing obligations in Gainesville. So, thinking about again opportunities to bring people into our community that might have gainful employment, career opportunities, perhaps in the business community, but could utilize this housing. It's a huge opportunity for, again, that cross-pollination and connection in the broader community.
Tom, are you going to use it this summer? I forget. Are you going to move some students in?
Yeah, so you triggered a point as, so we're not letting grass grow under our feet. So we actually have, we created an intern rate sheet, and I just sent it to you, Bob, and we already have three applicants for NASCAR to intern. They'll move in.
Not to me. I have kids coming from the Landing School,
yeah,
which is up north, for 2 weeks.
Yep. So we have three already from NASCAR. They're going to move in like May 20-something, I believe, Charisse.
Yes.
So there'll be intern bed availability. We also are we sent a mailer out to all the people who deposited for fall and spring to say, hey, get good news. The residence hall will be open for summer B. Get a jump start on your education or whatnot. And last time we had
five
deposits for summer B. And we anticipate about 8 or 9 athletes that typically need to come in to make up or catch up to come in for summer B. So it is open for summer B. And then we also have 3 residential camps scheduled for July. So that we'll have, I think we're doing volleyball, men's soccer, and I can't remember the other sport, softball. That we're going to test out doing an athletic residential camp. So yes, we are, and we're going to, and it's great because this is all revenue not planned, not budgeted. Yeah. So everything we're doing is just
So Charisse, that the photo you showed of the five people, or do any of them live in the hall or just an RA?
Cameron Bunn, the residence life coordinator, she will live in the residence hall. And if
yeah, you'll get to see. We'll get Charisse. Go ahead.
If you go to the next slide. We kind of covered a lot of this, but I will go over it again.
There you go.
And it, yeah, wow.
All right. So Cameron Bunn, the residence life coordinator, will be living in the residence hall along with four RAs. We will have one RA per floor, and we are actively recruiting for them in this month. We've already done several interviews, and we have two more interviews to do next week. And we'll be wrapping this up this month and being able to offer them their position so that we can secure them. In the month of May, with our partnership with NASCAR, we do have their interns moving in. We have move-in dates on May 28th and May 29th. We have three so far. We were told that their intern class is about 12 to 15 students, so we may get some more between now and then, and we're pretty excited about that. June, our summer B-term move-in. June classes begin on June 30th, so we'll be moving our B-term students in on June 29th. We have about five applications so far. We may get a few more, in addition to about a dozen athletes as well. So June will be kind of a soft opening, but I appreciate that opportunity to kind of run through everything with a small group before the large move-in in the fall. In July, around July 31st, August 1st, we're going to have our student-athlete move-in. And as Dr. Labasso mentioned, we will have some summer camps from the athletic department. And in August is what I call the grand opening. We're going to have a move-in weekend from about August 26th to August 28th. Classes begin on August 29th, and that will be everyone. All 252 students will be officially moving in, getting started, and getting to enjoy the Falcon residence life. And at this time, I'd like to give you a quick live camera action of where we stand right now. It is almost move-in ready, so I hope to see each of you at the ribbon cutting if you can make it.
The so we and we added some things too as the budget came through that were good to really help for like interns and camps. That the suites will all have a microwave and a refrigerator. You know, one of the not the big ones, but the taller, not the small box ones. So that comes in there, which will help, you know, for those types of things. And then the what we built into the first floor is a full apartment. So Cameron will have a full apartment. It's a two-bedroom apartment with a full kitchen and a little family room. And it's in the first floor wing where there is no rooms. It's off of the lounge and study room. So I think it's an attractive set up to recruit great people like Cameron to take the job. So, yeah, we're excited
and the extra rooms, so the ones you haven't gotten a deposit for yet. Are you gonna? You said you were gonna hold some of those for walk on athletes. Did I hear that
so,
right?
So let me go back to my notes really quick. We have 33 spots left to offer. About 13 of those are for the walk ons, and 20 are for non athletic students.
So what we did when, you know, so we scholarship, we pay room for 108 athletes mm-hmm. as part of our thing. But many of this, not all of them, but a good number of sports, they have walk-ons, and they're rostered, you know, players. So we allocated each team a number of walk-on, or sometimes we call them walk-ons. There's like baseball has, they do a bunch of partials, so above their full. So, you know, we allocate, and because the recruiting season lags into this time of the year, we know we had to kind of reserve those, so we think those will fill easily there. So that's how we kind of managed it with the athletics. I get the 108 that are paid for, and then you know another 50 some odd that are
56
walk on or partial students that, you know, like there was a recent, you know, baseball kid that was awarded a partial and recruited. So if he was to apply today, normally he'd be in the back of the line So you got a scholarship, partial scholarship athlete who would have to be in an apartment. So we thought it made sense to give them an allocation to try to keep their team. It won't be 100%, but the vast majority of them in a hall. And our waiting list is quite
extensive.
As you can see.
That brings me to the point, Tom. When are you going to start planning for the next housing units?
It's a great question because the master plan does call for another facility. And, my thought was to, let's operate this for a year and, make sure we get good at it. And then we can start that conversation for, second phase.
You don't want to wait too long. You want to be ahead of the curve so you can start planning to do it.
Well, it's kind of funny. Right now, it's kind of crazy with, just the 10-month delay that we did cost us a little bit more to build it than it would have if we'd done it originally, right? And now the prices are even worse. And then we got interest rates now that are not as good as they were. Still good, but... So, we've got to weigh all that out. And I think, we want to do a little bit of a fundraising effort towards it because I think it's good to have some. I think because we were able to put some good equity in here, we got really affordable pricing for the students.
So. Yeah, I know of another state college right now that's getting ready to do their second phase. They only did 96 rooms on their first phase. They would have liked to have done a few hundred on this next phase. They're only doing 96 on phase two. And again, just like us, there's more people that want it than the supply that exists. But the interest rates now today would probably be about 1.25% higher than what we got, maybe even more. So that environment has really changed here in the last 90 days pretty substantially, even versus 30 days ago. I was looking at the indexes that we use for loan rates and was amazed at how much they had gone up just in the last 30 days.
Yeah. So anyhow, it's going well, and we'll definitely be looking at that. It's this is really a game changer for us and really going to, change the campus environment like never before. We're neophytes in it and we're going to.
We got this.
We got it, though. It's been a pleasure. It's been a labor of love. And Charisse has been, I referenced she was drinking from several fire hoses.
Yes.
It was a great job and, and a greater team. I told Eric, your job's just to fill it. So he was kind of spearheading the promotion and marketing of it. And Tim Norton did a great job with all the creation, and Brian Babb with the creating a housing corporation and doing all of those agreements that you all approved. When you look back, it was it's quite a. Quite a bit, because we had to create a separate 501c3 to do this, and in the middle of a pandemic,
mm-hmm.
Let's build a residence hall.
and how about that board?
And that board,
that board, unbelievable, right, Eric?
The board is lights out, and this board for supporting that vision, and it's can't say enough about the generations that are going to benefit from this this initiative.
Cerise, I know you're so busy getting ready for the planning, but I asked Tom, we've got to have activities for having more students on campus.
Absolutely.
And looking at the student center budget, I don't know if you're going to need additional funds to help you plan, because it's important to have activities to keep our students busy
and
on campus.
Our both of our coordinators, Cameron and Shakira, have already had a lot of wonderful ideas for programming for all of our students, the Resident Life students, as well as the entire college community. So we definitely have a few things that we plan to bring on board.
I think I hear Betty advocating for a budget increase.
One other comment I'd like to make, too, is
thank you.
I'm Charisse, the great job she's done, but and also Chris Wainwright and his team. I mean, when you take a look with along with our contractor to be able to accomplish this in 12 months, I told Tom the other day, I was hoping my house would get built in 12 months, and they got this 252 room dorm, you know, residence, you know, student housing residence built. So
kudos to Chris and the facilities team.
Yeah.
It's amazing. This is, you know, not even a year, and look where we are.
Definitely a team effort. Definitely. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. If I forgot anyone else with the residence hall, well, thank you, everyone who's had to hear me and listen to me and stress about this residence hall for the last couple years. But moving on.
We'll take a quick break, Tom.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds great. A 5-minute break?
Yeah, just comfort break real quick.
Awesome.